finding pregnancy support you can trust is worth celebrating. Getting it on sale is worth belting Beyonce in your car. That's right. Ritual's Black Friday sale is on. Support your body's new nutrient needs with their clinically backed prenatal multivitamin. Or give back to your gut with Natal Biotic, a probiotic supplement for trying, pregnancy, and postpartum to support digestive, vaginal, and baby's immune health. At Ritual, quality is top priority. All of their supplements are clean, third-party tested for heavy metals, and 100% made traceable. Because you deserve high-quality support at every stage of your pregnancy journey. Cut prices without cutting corners and get their best savings on their best supplements with 40% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/pregnancy support. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello, ladies. Welcome back to another episode of Perspectives with Sherry. I am your host, Sherry Ryan. And on this evening, we are so blessed to have a very special guest with us, Dr. Alina Crawley, who is affectionately known to all of you as Dr. Alina. So that's what we're going to call her tonight. welcome, Dr. Alina.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yes. Now, ladies, you know how I do. So let's get some quick admin stuff out the way. So if you're new here, let me just say that this is a safe space for women in midlife. Over here, we talk all things health, wealth, and empowerment, and all the wonderful things that feed into those three categories. And you all know that we have been doing a series since mid-July on relationships, right? And so we have been talking about relationships, whether it be the relationship with yourself, dating, after divorce, family, and particularly what I wanted to focus on this evening is marriage. We don't talk enough about how to keep our marriages intact. You know, like, this is a society that throws marriages away when things don't work, but we want to focus this evening on marriages and how to some help from our beloved guest on how to keep things good in your marriage life, right? So, and that's wherever you are, whether it's a new marriage where you're 20 some years in, whether you have found each other later in life, like myself and my husband, or whatever the case may be, there is a tip for you. So we're going to get into that tonight. So before we get into the interview, really quick, I want to give you guys some background on our beloved guest, Dr. Alina. So let's talk about it. Dr. Alina M. Crawley is a relationship educator. She's a coach and a co-founder of Your Marriage Works, LLC, with a doctorate in community care and counseling and a passion for helping couples thrive. She equips individuals with tools to build emotionally connected, purpose-driven relationships through coaching, workshops, and retreats. Dr. Alina offers us... wonderful things. She offers us a faith-aware and culturally grounded approach to love, communication, and long-term connection. Whether guiding couples before the vows or helping them reconnect after the altar, her mission is simple: to help people maximize their relationships and learn to love well. So with that being said, ladies, you're going to want to hear what she has to say. Welcome again, Dr. Lena. Thank you for being here.
Glad to be here.
Good, good, good. So let's get into this interview. My question to you, number one, is this. You often talk about five conversations every couple should have before saying I do. Can you walk us through those and why they're non-negotiable?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, one of the things that a lot of couples do is they get caught up in the feeling of a new relationship, which is wonderful, right? But unfortunately, those feel-good hormones that you get in the beginning may not always sustain you if you don't couple them with wisdom and learning more about the other person, right? And so I have five things that I like to call the five F's that you should talk about before you get married. Individuals can remember this if they are a fiancé preparing to get married. The first one is faith. So you want to make sure that you all are on the same page. And I know often we think about faith in the context of religious orientation. And while that is important, absolutely, I want to be clear, I'm a woman of faith myself. And so, yes, it is important that you are on the same page if you have a specific religious background. But also, faith speaks to the core values that guide your relationship. So you want to make sure that you're on the same page in that area. The second is finances. Finances can be incredibly difficult to talk about. For many, many people, you have different family backgrounds, different family of origin stories, right? Where some families are very, very open about finances and communicating about it, and others not so much. And so you want to be sure that you're on the same page in terms of what are our financial expectations as we move forward? Where are we with our credit? Where are we with our goals, our maybe credit card debt? Maybe where we are with those particular things before enter into a marriage with one another. How are spending habits, right? It's different between someone that splurges sometimes and someone that just is in a repetitive cycle of splurging. Are you investing? Mm-hmm. Those kind of things. The next thing is family. And in the family area, you know, as we look at, particularly as women are getting married later in life, we look at fertility, right? We look at concerns around navigating fertility. And many, many couples, while we often talk about how quickly we want to have children, we often talk about, oh, when are we going to start? If that's the plan for a new marriage, a new relationship, we also do not tend to consider what happens if we can't. So what happens if at the point that we prepare to enter into this relationship, we are unable to conceive? What happens? What are our thoughts? What does the other person think? Is that a deal breaker for the other individual if we can't conceive together? Family also entails, we're talking about people in a certain group demographic. You have this generation of individuals that are in between caring for their parents that are aging, and you also have sometimes caring for their own children and maybe even grandchildren. And so making sure that, hey, what are the expectations about caring for your family? Like, is mom and dad planning on moving in with us? Do we need to live somewhere near mom and dad? All those conversations have to happen, right?
Yes.
And then we have, you know, moving forward, not just 5 years, not just a year down the line, past the wedding date, where do we see ourselves 20, 25, 40 years, 50 years down the line as husband and wife? Are we going to be the old couple holding hands, walking down in the park together? Are we going to be the little couple bickering over coffee? Like, what does that look like for us? Are we saving for retirement? Where are we going to retire? That kind of thing. And then lastly, fun. I believe that it is so important to actually like the person that you are with. Like, it is incredible. And I know that that sounds so simple, right? But you would be surprised how many couples don't actually like each other. Like, I want, when there's nothing else going on, there's no kids in the house, there's no, you know, job, nothing. You're just, I actually like you and I have fun with you. Do yes. you have fun with the person? Because that will carry you through a lot of life's difficulties.
Oh, yeah. I mean, those are so amazing. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, transparent moment. This is my second marriage. I've been married for 7 years. But all of the things that you touched on are so huge. I used to think to myself when I was married to my first husband, and, you know, it makes me sad to say it, but I would always, deep down, I always knew it wasn't sustainable. Like, we were a couple that were grounded in our children. And I always thought about, like, what happens when our kids all go off to school or go off to live life and we have literally nothing, you know what I mean? And so I think one of the things that is so great, and I noticed the differences between this one and my former marriage, was that him and I are so connected, and we do have fun, and we really do like each other, right? And it's not to shade or slide my first husband. We did the best we could with what we had, y'all. But I think that we have to understand that as far as marriage, you know, it goes past the honeymoon phase. There are things that we have to know that has to be there for it to be sustainable. So thank you for that. That was amazing. Those five F's are everything. Yes. All right. So my question to you next is, many couples in midlife feel stuck in routine. What are some practical ways to bring energy and connection back into long-term relationships?
Oh, I love this. I love this question. You know, once you get past the beginning initial stages, which I love of relationship, I think the whole experience of falling in love is amazing, right? But one of the things that couples tend to also lose sight of in the mundane day-to-day routine of things is breaking up the monotony with something fun, something exciting. You need those feel good, you need that dopamine, that rush of feel good hormones to help you to feel connected with that other individual. There's a ton of hormones. We're not going to get onto all the scientific language, right? But you do need the feel good hormones in your relationship to help you feel connected with one another. One of those things you could do is go on a trip together, go on a trip, travel together. That's very, very helpful for couples to do. Go see new places, experience new things, but do it together, because that way you'll be able to create those core memories, those things that you're going to hold on to in older age. And you really break up the monotony of the day to day, which can be hard. The other thing is important is to check in with one another. So by check in, I mean like literally sitting down, go on a date night, traveling during your trip. As you're traveling, make one of the days, this is the priority for that one day, and talk about, hey, where are we with our goals? My husband and I are very goal driven as a couple. So we tend to do very, very well when, okay, this is our goal. We tackle this goal and we work together very, very well in that way. And so I encourage couples, figure out what that goal is that you're trying to attack together, because it helps. Two is better than one, right? So we want to attack that goal at the same time. A lot of couples find themselves in a situation where you have your purpose is driven that way, mine is driven that way, and we don't have a mutual goal to kind of drive us together. And so what ends up happening is they go in opposite directions and they keep moving in those opposite directions. And so we want to kind of draw each other back in by checking in on each other's goals, but also what is our core goal as a couple?
Perfect. I love that. Awesome. All right. So Dr. Lena, my next question to you is, you recommend, and we talked about this, you said it a little bit about checking in, but you recommend couples do a mid-year or annual relationship check-in. What should that conversation look like, and how can couples keep it from turning into another argument?
Absolutely. Well, you know, we call it a mid-year check-in or even an annual check-in in some situations, but what the point is, you don't want to wait until that one event to create this conversation, right? Okay. So I really recommend that you do small moments throughout the year in preparation for the mid-year check-in. Because yes, you do need to have a schedule on, hey, this is our time together. We're going to sit down and talk. But you don't want that to become an argument. You kind of have some background throughout the year with small moments of connection that help you to ensure that you don't just blow up at that one moment. Because if you've been bottling stuff up all year, I can guarantee you, you're going to have a fight. You're checking.
For sure.
So the small moments look like kind of making sure that during the week you're checking with your partner, making sure that you're checking on their goals. This conversation should really be very relaxed. It should not be something that is a stressful situation, because you've already been having these small check-ins that are going on throughout the year. Ideally, it'd be over food. people tend to respond better when their bellies are full. And so you get the conversation flowing when people are full and not hangry. So you don't want that. Ladies, you want to make sure that you are in a good space, even hormonally. You want to make sure that you're not kind of really, really on edge, because right? that's probably not a good space to be. And schedule at a time that's away from the stressors of life. So ideally, it'd be like a travel situation or even a date. We're going to go to a hotel, book a hotel for just a couple hours or a night or whatever, and we're going to talk. And then after, we can enjoy ourselves in this particular space, right? We're going to enjoy ourselves in our hotel.
Yes.
About these things. Or just over dinner again, just a very laid back, relaxing environment. But you want to make sure that it's not the first time that things are being brought up that are concerns for your relationship.
Okay. All right. Perfect. 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 All right. So what are some of the most common communication traps couples fall into, and how do you coach them to shift into healthier patterns?
Absolutely. So I think one of the most common traps that people fall into is just, I'll leave it on the back burner for later. Mm-hmm. That I think you tend to have one person or both people that are conflict avoidant. And so conflict is not bad. Let me start there. Conflict is not bad. And a lot of couples perceive that conflict is going to mean an argument or a fight or a breakup, right? And because they avoid conflict, they never actually grow. So what you tend to see is in a lot of relationships, you have couples who, because they are conflict avoidant, they actually don't communicate at all, because they're trying so hard to avoid the conflict that they don't actually communicate well. And so every situation that happens, oh, that happened, that offended me, that hurt me, I'm going to sit on the back burner. That happened, that offended me, that hurt me, I'm going to put that on the back burner. If you know anything about the kitchen, particularly around Thanksgiving or Christmas time, you put stuff on the back burner and turn it down to simmer so that the flavors can be intensified.
Yeah.
So imagine that being the same thing that happens when you take an issue in your relationship and sit on the back burner. Mm-hmm. Eventually, mm-hmm. you have a couple things that's going to happen. You're going to either burn a pot because you're not watching it. You're going to have something boil over because you're not paying attention. Or that thing is going to get so intensified because it's had a long time to simmer. So you want to make sure that you are not just leaving things on the back burner, because eventually it's going to cause a problem if they're left unchecked. But that's the biggest problem I see. Couples just, oh, we'll deal with it later. It's not that big of a deal right now. Or using intimacy as a means to override dealing with those issues.
I could see that. I could see that. That's okay. That makes a lot of sense, actually. Yeah, I get that. So let me ask you, if emotions are running high in a conflict, because we're just talking about, you know, conflict resolution, whatever, what are a couple of tools that can help partners pause, reset, and come back together with respect?
Absolutely. So let's take it back to before the conflict happens, right? So I believe that there's ways you can prepare for conflict in relationship. And one of those things is you need to know what your partner's communication style is. You need to know when they are best receptive to receive information. I believe you can avoid so many conflicts if you respect and honor the fact that your partner may have a different communication style than you. Ladies, what that may mean is if your spouse or your significant other is coming home from work, when they walk through the door, it's probably not a good time to first have that conversation that you know is going to be touchy.
Right.
When they have not eaten, it is probably not a good time to have that conversation.
Right.
When it's been a while in your intimate life, it's probably not a great time to have that conversation. So we need to consider, like, and respect, and similar vice versa, right? Same thing, vice versa. If you carried a bunch of bags in the house from wherever, now is not the time to be fussing about something. Like, this is not the time for that. Like, let's respect and honor that. Now, beyond that, if you find yourself in a situation where the argument or the conflict is increasing in heat, as I like to call it, it's increasing. Like, okay, we need to reel it in a little bit. The first thing is remember that you're on the same team. Like, that's the first thought. Immediately, if my husband and I are in a heated, we call them heated debates. If we're in a heated debate, which don't even happen very frequently anymore, but when those things happen, the first thing is, wait a minute, we are a team. So we should not be fighting each other. That's the first thing. Mm-hmm. And if I ever get into a situation where I feel like we're fighting each other, then I have to really acknowledge, again, I'm a woman of faith. So there's another enemy here. Like, there is another enemy that is causing us to be in this particular battle. So we need to focus on that, not each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that is the first line of defense for me that helps to ensure that, hey, let's reframe our thinking. We like each other. And deep down, we love each other. And deep down, while I may not like you that much at this exact moment, I do know that you have my best interest at heart. If I can trust that, then I can trust that this is just a moment that we can get through. So
yeah.
I recommend that couples take the time, take a breath. Remember that you're playing for the same team. What is the goal? What do we need for our relationship to work after this disagreement? What is the goal that we have? And how can we make sure that we capitalize on this conflict by making agreement in an area where we clearly disagree? How can we get to a place of agreement? And remembering that I don't have to fight you. I don't have to kick you in the kneecap because we're actually on the same team. I need you to have your knees, please.
I love that. Yes. I concur. I love that. Every conflict doesn't have to be this like war, like where with all of a, you know, deep down fight. And those are teachable moments as well. Like you kind of said, like taking a breath, you know, all the things, ladies, listen and get these gems, honey, because she's giving us some. Listen.
It's hard. I mean, conflict is so hard.
It's hard to navigate. Yeah. It is totally hard to navigate. So I like that. I love what you said there. So for my next question, you said emotional safety is foundation of every healthy relationship. What does that look like in practice?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you're dealing with your partner, particularly in times of conflict or in general, what you have to remember is that you're not just loving the person that is the age they are today. Okay. You're trying to love and take care of the person that's 5 years old way back when.
Oh, wow.
So you're not just loving your partner as the person that you see standing before you, whatever the age is that they are.
Right.
You're also trying to love the 5-year-old that maybe misses their mom.
Ooh.
Or you're trying to love the 10-year-old that didn't get chosen for a game. You're trying to love the 16-year-old that didn't actually get their first job. You're trying to love all these versions of your partner. And there will be times when those different versions of them emerge. And so understanding, hey, I am trying to be here to create a safe environment for all those versions of you to feel loved by me, like all of them, and the ones that'll come up in the future. So keeping in mind that it is rare when you ever have a disagreement that is really, really volatile or really, really difficult or angry, what I most often find is it's not about the present issue. It's about something else. Like something else happened that is triggering your partner. And so it's causing them to erupt in this way. That you're just like, where in the world did that come from? That's the 5-year-old.
Yeah.
That's the not that they're acting 5 years old, but that's the 5-year-old emotion that's coming up out of them because you triggered them.
Right.
And so now we got to figure, or they were triggered by a situation. I won't say you did it, but they were triggered by a situation. And so you have to be in a space of emotional maturity for yourself to be able to ensure that you provide a safe space for your partner to be authentically who they are. Right.
Mm.
And so what I find the people that have the most difficulty with this, if I'm being honest, is women. Because I think that in our society, we have not created a lot of safe spaces for men to be emotionally vulnerable. And so while I believe that everybody needs emotional safety, I think that we have to consider in our society, it is more acceptable for a woman to be emotionally vulnerable than for a man. And so we have to make sure that as women in relationships with men, that we are providing a space that is safe for them to express their emotional vulnerability and not punish them for sharing with us intimately their emotions. So what often happens is that I see women who they think their partner is weak because they've expressed sadness or grief or emotion or despair. You're supposed to be a man. You need to be a man up about it. They get that everywhere.
Yeah.
In my opinion, they're partner should be the person with whom they can come and rest and find safety. But if you punish them, I guarantee you the first time you do it, you punish them for expressing an emotion, you will never see it again. Yeah. And then women complain their partner doesn't express themselves. They complain that the partner isn't connecting with them. They're not communicating their feelings. They complain that the partner is not sharing with them. They can't connect intimately with them. At what point, or did you punish them ever for sharing an emotion with you? They're not going to do it again. Because why would I do something I'm going to get punished for?
Right.
You do not punish behavior that you want to see repeated. That's a general rule for relationships. You do not punish for behavior that you want them to do again. So if you want him to open up to you again, you do not punish him for doing it.
Listen, let me just say this. Mind blown. And I think ladies and my sister girls, ladies of color, I think we need to like lean into this a little more because what she said really resonated with me. I mean, in my older age, I'm better at that. But when I was younger, no, I don't think I had a safe space for my husband. We have to, you know, and then if you think about you're raising little beautiful brown boys, right? And those of us that have sons and that's somebody's son. And, you know, if they didn't have that safe space, it makes so much sense, Dr. Lena. I mean, like you just popped me in the head with that one because I was like, well, okay. All right. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, so no, that was so good. So good. Thank you for that.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, it's important. And we think about, you know, mental health for men, again, men of color, particularly, we think about mental health. We think about all types of things that we have to provide a space where they can decompress. There's too many arrows hitting them all the time. We have to provide space that is safe.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. Ladies, please, please, please take that. Take that for action, okay? Because I will. And I think I do better now, but even when I'm not thinking about it, I want to always think about it because that resonated with me in a different way. So maybe you touched on my toes, but I mean, literally, I want, you know, I really want to make sure that I'm careful with that. I want to be careful with their hearts. Yeah. And just as I would want someone to be careful with my babies, my boys, I have two sons, their hearts.
Absolutely.
Right.
And it's not easy, but we have to try to remember. Yeah, for sure.
Amen. 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 All right. Well, let's talk about this. So when trust is broken, what are the first steps couples can take toward repair and what mistakes should they avoid?
When you have a concern for breaking trust or broken trust in a relationship, the first thing is it needs to be clear. It is on, it is the responsibility of the person who broke the trust to ensure that the other person never has a reason to doubt them again. And you cannot determine how long it takes someone to trust you. Because trust, once earned, is, you know, you earn it, you have it, it's solid, but once you break it, it is very difficult to rebuild and your relationship will never be the same. That's just is what it is. The relationship can never be what it once was once trust is broken. Now, that does not mean the relationship can't work. I've seen people navigate through situations of infidelity. I've seen people navigate through situations of other trust issues, but know that once you step and break the trust, your relationship will never be what it once was. It can't be because the person has no capacity to just, you know, it's there. It happened. It is what it is. We got to deal with it. Now, how do we deal with it? Well, if you choose to maintain the relationship, that's the first part, right? Because once we make a choice, both parties choose to continue in the relationship, then both parties are also going to commit to the process of regaining trust. What that means is the person that offended the other person, the person that violated the trust of the relationship, is going to have to work overtime to make sure that person never has a reason to doubt them again. Whatever barriers or boundaries need to be put in place, those need to be put in place, and that person needs to be forthcoming about it. Now, for the other person who is navigating through these feelings, because this is where things get hung up a little bit, the first thing is you need to acknowledge the fact that you were hurt. Now, you also need to acknowledge, yes, they hurt me because they violated the trust, but did that violation trigger something else in me? Did that trigger the 5-year-old, 10-year-old, 15-year-old, 35-year-old? Was that part of me triggered? And if it was, why? Now I need to deal with that. I have to then go and deal with the trigger that is now causing me to feel whatever I'm feeling. And I also have to commit to, if I'm going to stay in a relationship, committing to do that work. because that self-work is going to help me work with the other person in terms of regaining trust. I also have to commit to not slapping the other person across the head with it every chance I get. And that's hard. If I'm going to commit to staying, if I'm going to commit to working this out, then I can't slap the other person across the head with it every time. Now, I'm not saying the first 6 months, you're not going to feel like it. I'm not saying the first year, you're not going to be like, every time you see them, you want to take a waffle and toss it across their face.
Listen.
What I am saying is you have to be mindful that in your hurt and in your experience, and if you're a person of faith, I encourage you to use that as a means of helping you navigate. First of all, seeking discernment, wisdom, and guidance to make sure that this is something you need to stay in. But also asking God to do the work to help you. Because what happened is an issue and is a real issue needs to be dealt with. But your response to it is going to be predicated upon what your past history is. And so what in your history that is maybe being revealed to you in this situation that God can help you work through, that he can help you work out, that he can help you navigate. You can speak to a therapist. You can speak to someone to help you work through those things so that then you, when you both come back together, you're both healed and whole and prepared to for the next season of your relationship.
Yes, I love that. No, I totally love that. All right. So let's get into this question. Can you share a simple repair phrase or gesture that almost any couple could start using today to soften tension and reconnect?
You know, this is a tricky question because I think it depends on the dynamics of the relationship, right? I am a person, just in full transparency, I'm a person that tends to be a jokester. Between my husband and I, we both joke, but I am probably the bigger jokester in our relationship. And so I know that if I'll just say a quick quip, it'll lighten the mood in the disagreement. It'll lighten the mood of the situation. He'll crack a smile and then we'll be all right. Right.
Yeah.
Or he can say, or he knows if he says something funny, I'm like, okay, that was a good one. You can have that was a good one. but you have to figure out in your relationship for some couples, let me tell you what not to use, right? I would discourage the use of intimacy as a means of fixing tension. Like that would be my first thing. I would discourage that only because I see it a lot. Couples will use intimacy to kind of override or get around tension and things that need to be actually fixed. We just cover it up with that. A great session. We feel good. We move on. But that's not actually fixing it now. If you are trying to figure out, hey, what can we do? I think it goes back to remembering that we're on the same team. Whatever your pick a team name, whatever your team name is, team whatever, be that. And you can use that as saying, you know what, I'm team Crawley. So, hey, listen, we team Crawley. Like, come on. Yeah. They ain't going to punk us like this. Come on. We team Crawley. That would be my thing because I'm a real joke. So I was like, come on. We team Crawley. Let's come on. Like, put it in. Come on. Let's go. We team.
Yeah.
We gotta take this thing outside of us. And so whatever works in your relationship, for some couples, that's going to be humor. It's going to be lighthearted. It's going to be a team name. It's going to be food for some people. Like, hey, let's go out to get something to eat so we can calm down. Let's go take a walk together. Yeah. Let's do something to kind of bring the tension down a little bit. But I think each couple needs to find that thing, whatever that thing is, because it's not going to be one blanket thing for everybody.
Okay. All right. Very good. All right. So this is a huge one. Okay. Because you know that my audience is midlife women, right? And so blended families are a big, big thing. So my question to you then is, blended families bring unique challenges.
Yeah,
I know they do. What advice do you give couples who are navigating loyalty, boundaries, and communication with kids that parents involved?
Yeah, you know, this is absolutely a massive one. And surprisingly, it affects a lot of different generations because this blended family dynamic affects more than just the couple themselves. Sometimes you have individuals from blended families. So you're talking about maybe two moms and two dads because their parents have gotten remarried on both sides. You got to navigate, okay, who is the priority? Who gets the call? Who do the kids get to call grandma? Like all the things, right? So navigating that it can be very difficult. Right. Even so much that during our premarital sessions, my husband and I ensure that if we know the couple is has been remarried or they have a blended family situation, we spend an entire session just talking about those family dynamics and what their plans are for how to navigate it, because you can't wait until you're in it to figure it out. So trying to help them figure those things out early on. Now, to deal with this, the best thing to do is to have a conversation when it's not an urgent need to make a decision. It is my belief that the best method of communication is proactive. So having the conversation when it's just hypothetical, right? Hypothetically, do we want to have all the kids with us at Christmas or Thanksgiving or both? Hypothetically, what do you think your children's mother or your children's father is going to feel about this situation? Yeah. Hypothetically, if we wanted to take a vacation during the school year, is the other parent going to be upset about this? Mm. Hypothetically, how involved do you want me to be in the child's discipline? Hypothetically, if we came home and I found your teenage son doing something that I think he should not be doing, hypothetically, would you like me to deal with it now? Or would you like me to wait for you to come home to deal with it? Hypothetically. Now, the challenge is that many couples would have a hard time thinking of those hypotheticals by themselves. And so that is where coaches come in, right? Or coaches or a therapist or whatever you choose to use. You do need, in many situations, someone there to help you think of these hypothetical situations. Hypothetically, would you like me to communicate directly with the other parent? Or would you like all communication to go through you? Because that can come up. If there's a need, and say, for example, just as women, right? Say you are the stepmother and you have a young adult or adolescent daughter, stepdaughter, and that younger adolescent stepdaughter goes through a normal change that happens in adolescence for young women. Mm-hmm. Would the father want the first point of contact to be him? Or is it appropriate for the stepmother to contact the child's mom directly?
Fair, totally fair. Mm-hmm.
So how do we navigate those situations? And so I do think that proactive communication is the best advice that I could give to anyone. Now, you're not going to get everything, but you should be able to cover most things with hypotheticals. You'll know how they want you to respond.
Right. Oh, I love that. I wish that I had those tools in the beginning of this marriage. I am certainly in a blended family. Now all of our children are grown, but there have been things that have come up. There were things that were really shocking to me as this stage, you know, and I won't give too much away other than I'll say stuff like, okay, so like when my stepdaughter graduated, well, we'll go back to my stepson, he graduated from college. I didn't realize that their mother did not want me present. We were good until my husband and I got married. These are all things that I think that it sounds silly, but it's not silly. It's deep. It's really, really deep. Yeah. And, you know, like that's something I'm like with my own children. I'm so serious about education and all that. So like I wanted to be there. But so I think that, you know, those are conversations that we should have had. I didn't realize we needed to. But you know what? Yeah. You have to be cognizant of those things, because things, as you know, it could change after you say, I do. I mean, because we all got along great until after that. So it huge, huge, Dr. Lena. Such a great point. The hypotheticals. Yes, y'all. I love that. Yeah. That was, yeah.
Weddings are a big one too. Weddings of stepchildren. Who walks the bride down the aisle? Right. Who is the one that does the weddings? Where does the step parent sit during the wedding?
Yeah, I mean, you know what I mean. It sounds like something that you think that, oh well, we'll get there, but no, those are big deals, right? I mean, they really are.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, even though it's just hypothetical, the hypothetical scenario helps the two of you all to have an agreement. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what most couples miss is that where there is no agreement, you are likely to have, you are not even likely, you're going to have conflict. In a space where you do not have agreement, you are going to have conflict. And so if you're trying to navigate conflict effectively, proactively, you have to find every area of agreement that you can. Again, going back to fact number one with faith, I don't want to give the enemy any leeway in my relationship. Same. So every area where I can find points of agreement, we're going to make an agreement in every area that we can. And when it comes up, nope, we need to find an agreement here, because when you lack agreement, you're going to have conflict. We don't want to give him no room So let's find an agreement.
I agree. No, ma'am. You're right. 1,000%. All right. So that brings me to my next question. As both a woman of faith and a relationship coach, how do you weave spiritual principles and practical tools to help couples thrive?
Yeah. You know, so it is my personal belief that God created marriage. That is my that is my value. That is what I believe. That he created this institution of marriage and that he designed this thing very well. Yes. And so I believe that there are scriptural principles and basics that help us understand how we should navigate marriage and relationships. Mm-hmm. One of those things being that, you know, we get hung up on this word submission, right? But scripture is very clear about women submitting to your spouse. Actually, to be fair, before that verse, it talks about submitting to one another. But that's a whole nother conversation. That's a whole nother podcast. Okay. Submitting to one another. But we get hung up in that area. Basically, in that passage, it's talking about respecting and honoring your husband. Mm-hmm. But for husbands, it says to love your wives as Christ loved the church, which means to give yourself up for it, meaning Christ in the church. And so it is important that husbands understand that their role is to protect and to cover, but that protection and covering is not just physical. It's emotional. It's spiritual. Mm-hmm. It's being able to lead and guide. For a woman to submit, it means to yield, to stand up under the covering of his umbrella. That's the best analogy I can give to people. It's like you have women that struggle with this idea of submission, but they also want to be protected. They also want to be covered. Well, a man can't cover or protect someone that is unwilling to stand underneath his umbrella. If you go out in the rain and your man holding the umbrella and you so I ain't standing underneath that umbrella, well, sis, you're gonna get wet. Like you got you have to be willing to stand underneath his umbrella and trusting that he is leading and guiding your relationship in the way in which it should go because he's being prayerfully led by God. Now, we have couples that may not necessarily ascribe to our religious belief, which is Christianity.
Okay.
And that's fine. It is my prayer and my hope that if they come to us, that they are aware of what our background is, but we are absolutely fine. Not necessarily. We're not here to slap you across the head with anybody's Bible. That's not what we're here to do. But even without that, there are principles scripturally that help us help other couples. Some of those things like love, like just the basic idea of how to love, being patient, being kind, being considerate of others above yourself, not backbiting, not those basic principles that are scripturally based help us to even be able to effectively coach couples that may not identify as Christian. For sure.
Mm-hmm. That was amazing. So now what I like to do for all my guests, Dr. Lena, you've given us some amazing tools, insights, and gems to apply to our lives, to our marriages, our relationships, all of that. So thank you for that. And so what I like to do now is I want to give you the opportunity now to talk about what do you have coming up? You know, how can we support your new projects or things that you've got coming up? And please also mention where we can find you on social media.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you for that space. I can be found on all social media platforms at Hey Dr. Lena. My husband and I, as the co-founders of Your Marriage Works, can be found online at Marriage is Ministry 2, T-O-O. And that is just, you know, we really over there kind of help cater to individuals, particularly those of faith, but even those that are not, to help them understand like your marriage is a ministry. Like it's this thing that you're supposed to help cultivate and grow and steward well. And so helping couples in that avenue, we do have products. We have, both physical products and digital products. We offer live coaching sessions. We offer even like we talked about the mid-year marriage check-in, we have couples accountability coaching. So there are some couples who just need someone to walk with them once a month, twice a month, however much you need through their process. I will tell you that our baby is really premarital education. That is kind of like that's our baby because we have found, you know, in just full honesty and full transparency, that couples will come to us when the house is burning down. Like the house is literally like burning down. We're at six now. And they're standing there holding the fire extinguisher going, help me, without using it. They're just standing there holding it. And my husband and I were talking, saying, you know, we really just, we want couples, we want to be able to reach them way before they even move into the house. Like before you even get into the house, let's talk about how to make sure that it's built well, right? Let's talk about how to make sure that it's fireproof. Let's talk about how to make sure that, you know, you don't have to be the one standing there with the flames and everything, you holding the fire extinguisher, not knowing how to use it. We want to help them before they get there. And so that's really our baby. And so I invite anyone, if you know you have children, you have family members, or even yourselves, if you're interested in premarital education, that is our baby. We are working on some workshops and some retreats that we've done historically. My husband and I have hosted marriage retreats. And so we're working on some more things for that. And so please feel free to follow on all socials and you'll stay up to date with all the information.
Awesome. Thank you so much. This has been amazing, Dr. Lena. I think that when I started the series on relationships, you know, I found that a lot of the focus was ladies that are trying to find someone, right? We're talking about dating more than, but there were other, like I told you, there were other aspects. We did family relationships, relationships yourself, all of that. But marriage, I think that as a society as a whole, we don't focus enough on how to stay married and how to cultivate our marriages and pour into those, right? It's an acceptable thing in this country, but divorce is at an all-time high, right? You know, it's like, okay, if it doesn't work, just go your separate ways. And I love that you have taken this, you and your husband have taken this as your life's calling, your purpose to pour into couples and to help them stay married. So let me just say kudos to both of you and God bless what you're doing, because that is God's work. God does love marriage. He does. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
And so with that being said, as I get ready to end this episode, I would like for you to have the last word. What do you want to say to the woman that's watching, that's struggling and saying, you know what? I don't know if I can do this. You know, like, I don't know if this is for me. I'm struggling in my marriage. I'm confused. I don't know where to go. I want you to talk to her right now. And then after that, I'm going to let your words be the last words. And we're just going to say good night. But I want you to talk to that woman right now because she's watching.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that. If you find yourself in a situation where you're uncertain if you are able to continue on in the relationship, the first thing I want to tell you is that sometimes really great things are really hard. Mm. Not toxic, but sometimes really great things are hard. Right. And so I will give you the advice that I was given before I even got married by a woman who looked at me and said to me, as a very young, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed fiance that I was at the time, and said, you know, marriage is hard, but you can do it. And it does, if you tend to it, get better with time. And so I can look back at the relationship, even with my spouse, from our almost 18 years of being together between dating and marriage, and say, yes, every conflict we've had, every disagreement that we've overcome, every hurdle that we've overcome has made us better on the other side. By the grace of God, has made us better on the other side. If you are someone who is a woman of faith, I encourage you to tap into that, because that is going to be your strength. Who better to talk to about your spouse or your significant other than the person that made them, that created them? You have to find in and of yourself the capacity, the understanding to say, you know what? We can do hard things, but you got to get on the same page. I would encourage you to, with your partner, find someone that you can connect to, that you can talk to, and help you navigate through to the other side. I want to see you on the other side of this difficult season, because seasons happen. But in that season, you can choose to capitalize on your conflict. You can choose to work through the hard times so that then you'll have on the other side a testimony for someone else that you can help pull them out to. Hard times don't last always, But if you commit to working through the process, things will be better. And that, yes, marriage is hard, but you can do it.
Amazing. And y'all, just like that, we're going to end it on that note. Thank you again, Dr. Lena. And for ladies, all of you that are watching, please take note. Leave us a comment and let us know what you thought about it. Interview. If you have any questions for Dr. Lena, put them in the comments. I'll make sure she gets those and that she can communicate with you. So thank you again so much. And I'm really blown away by all of the insights that you gave us tonight. I will use them. I hope you all do too, ladies. And like I said, leave us a comment. Let Dr. Lena know what you're thinking, and I'll make sure that, you know, she gets the chance to get those and get in contact with you. So thank you, ladies. All right. And on that, we're going to say good night. Good night.